I think the biggest problem that we have in infield training and baseball training as a whole is it's predictable. The game is unpredictable and practice is predictable, and that's a problem.
Welcome back, coaches, and thanks for taking our call. You're dialed into the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse. This is our podcast where we connect you with some of the best baseball minds in our game today, giving each of you guys tremendous insight and information that you can use to develop and grow yourself as a coach. You could also use the podcast information to positively enhance your players and your program, but also we know we're helping grow the game of baseball along with you. So thank you, each and every one of you guys, for listening in each time we put a brand new episode out. I'll be your host, Jeremy Schiedinger, and if you're an infield coach looking to get better, or you're just tuning in to learn more about infield play on both fronts, we have you covered with this episode. It is certified audio gold, and we're going to get to the details of that in just 1 second. Our hope is that if you're listening in right now, you're one of our loyal ABCA members. You're part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity. Last year, we welcomed in over 8,300 coaches into our association. And moving through our first month of brand new 2016-17 membership, we're sitting at an ABCA record of over 2,400 coaches already on board with us for this year. Head on over to abca.org. You can check out our membership benefits. It's an extensive list and all the great things we're doing for our coaches, and we hope you join and get on board with us. Also, we're building momentum towards our annual ABCA convention. If you haven't been before, you've got to find a way to get to Anaheim, California, January 5th through the 8th. If you're interested in 4 days of heaven for a baseball coach, we're talking 25 coaching clinics from the very best coaches from all over the world. You're also looking at the world's largest baseball trade show with over 300 different exhibitors, fellowship, the relationship building, the networking opportunities, all while experiencing this with over 5,000 other baseball coaches. It's something, if you've never seen before, it will blow your mind. It's a tremendous opportunity, and we're hoping you're making plans to join us out in Anaheim in January. You won't want to miss out on this experience, as so many of our podcast guests have referenced, guys. It's the perfect time of the year to get ready before the first pitch of the new season. We hope you jump on a plane, you jump in your car, you come see us in Anaheim, California. Since we did open up a brand new year of membership on September 1st, and coupled with the releasing of our impressive list of clinic speakers for our January convention, we're using this medium, our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, and we're highlighting our featured clinicians who you will see up on the main stage with each episode until January convention. This is going to give our listeners a glimpse into their particular clinic. It's going to allow them to connect with our coaches before they ever even hit the main stage, and this episode is definitely going to do that for you. We're fired up about this one, and let's bring it to you right now. Thanks for listening in, coaches. We hope you enjoy the show. And thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball. Okay, coaches, we're excited here. This is actually our first podcast that we've done. We're talking about infield play, and we're excited about doing it with Nate Trosky of Trosky Baseball. You're going to see Nate out at our Anaheim convention. He'll be up on the main stage talking about infield play, talking about the sixth tool. But we're excited to have Nate. Welcome to the Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, Nate. Thanks for being on with us.
Yeah, Sheath, it's great to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we've crossed paths in a lot of different regards, and I was really looking forward to this conversation. And like I just mentioned, our first infield podcast. And so we've got a lot to get through and a lot of information I know that you want to get out and I know we want to talk about for our listeners. But before we get into that, give us a quick overview of Trosky Baseball and, I think, more importantly, where it's come from. I know, obviously, your dad had a lot of influence on you through the baseball ranks. And talk about that, where this idea of the organization came from and where it's at right now and what you're doing. But where do you see this thing going moving forward?
Trosky Baseball is kind of a family thing. Basically, you know, it starts back to father influencing baseball to my brothers and myself. And his influence was his father, who's a very famous major leaguer. He's one of the top players in the history of the game. They say top 20 for his first 6 years, and his rookie stats were pretty special. He had 142 RBIs, 36 home runs, and he batted .330.
Wow.
And that was at the age of 20. Yeah, he was just 20 years old, and he you know, he passed baseball down through his family, my dad and his brother, and my dad's brother played in the big leagues, and we have other cousins that played in the big leagues and a lot of minor leaguers. So as a kid, my passion and inspiration was to be a baseball player too. And my career only lasted so long, so I got into coaching, started doing camps and trying to, even my mission really was to be around as many quality coaches as I could be around. And that was kind of like my goal for about 15 years. It actually still is today, because I love to learn. The model that I try to live by is better every day, and I try to pass it on to my players as well. But each day I'm just trying to get better, and I try to listen and be around guys that have, you know, played the game at the highest levels and also the lowest levels. I think we can learn from everybody.
Right.
I learn from little league coaches. I learn from big league coaches. I learn from high school coaches and college coaches. So as long as we're open and we're good listeners and we're good observers, I think there's always something to be learned. And so over those 15 years, I've you know, been in a situation where I've been blessed with the opportunity to be around thousands of college coaches, hundreds of thousands of pro scouts. And I've worked numerous, each year I work about 5 to 10 college prospect camps, opportunities with the area codes. I'm a part-time scout with Major League Baseball, so I get to work with the top infielders in the world. And this year, Nick Allen and Hunter Green were two of our shortstops with the Brewers area code team. You know, opportunities to be around guys like that for over the last 10 years,
right,
seeing what the best are doing. And then sitting in the dugouts with when I'm running the Trotsky camps, we host Trotsky 30 camps where we bring in 30 college coaches and pro scouts, and being around those guys numerous times throughout the year, you know, watching the way they go about their business, watching the way they work with the players, asking questions. And I think the most important thing is really to ask questions. A lot of times we don't really, I live to break it down. I love it. You know, mm-hmm. we just break it down, and it's not about being right or wrong. It's about learning from each other and feeding off each other. So the showcases, there's 30 plus college coaches, pro scout, and the area code dugout, you know, there's 5 to 10 pro scouts that either play in the big leagues or in the minor leagues that love the game. You know, we sit in the dugout and break it down. Then we get to watch the best players and see how they go about their business and how their hands and their feet work. Over the last 10 years, I've been in the Dominican Republic for spring break with the German national team, and we play 15 games in about 20 days, and we train in the mornings and also in the afternoons when we're not playing. And we have a lot of the Dominican professional instructors come over and work with our guys. So spending a lot of time kind of seeing how the Dominican coaches go about their business, and also just seeing how the youth of the Dominican, how they go about their business just in the streets, throwing balls off walls, you know, playing catch with themselves, throwing the ball up as high as they can just for hours, playing pickle. You know, you'll see kids out there for 3-4 hours daily playing pickle, throwing the ball off the wall for hours, playing three flies up, hitting each other ground balls on tough, rough fields. And, you know, so really, you know, sitting back and watching. And I would, for the last 10 years in the Dominican, when most of the guys go back to the cafeteria after our training session in the morning, I would stay on the field, and I just sit there and watch. And I watch the Dominican Viscones, those are the trainers, and I watch how they go about their business, and I watch just the kids in the streets, and what are they doing, and how are they really developing at a higher rate than most of our players here in America. And I would say our baseball IQ and instincts are superior because we have the education, but in the Dominican, their 10,000 hour rate, where they're trying to get as many hours as they can, and they're just doing it because it's fun.
Sure.
But they're getting the hours in, and it's interesting to observe how they go about getting those hours in, and what are they doing within those hours. And they're fun hours, but what are they doing to advance the skills that are necessary to be great infielders? So over 10 years of breaking that down, putting it all together, watching big leaguers, slow-mo-ing. And since I'm not with a team, years ago I was a college coach, and I was a professional coach in Europe and coached in my league for a few years. You know, when you're doing team stuff, mm-hmm. your time is limited. But now that we have Trotsky Baseball, it's given me freedom to really spend extra time, because, you know, when you're with a team, you're consumed with a team. I have team coaches that run our team, so I don't have to run those teams. And I'm on the field each year, hours and hours, hundreds and hundreds of hours, working with kids that don't know how to field, working with first rounders, working with, you know, average high school guys, and figuring out ways to maximize the ability of first rounder and also the average, you know, average high school player. So lots, you know, in the mix, and it's been a fun ride, and I continue to learn. it's been a lot of fun. And I get excited to share the observations and the learnings that I've had over the years, because it continues to get better. And I'm getting to a place where I'm going, you know what, I'm getting to a place where the drills are super efficient, and they bring out the most in the players, and that's all we can ask, because we don't have a lot of time as coaches.
That's it. Well, you talked about, and we're going to spend a lot more time talking about your experience down in the Dominican, because there's a lot to be learned from that, as you alluded to. The biggest thing, and it's so interesting, Nate, to hear you say this, because so many guys that get on these podcasts, they actually bring the exact same point up. You have to be a lifelong learner. If you are not open to challenging what you know about the game and really evaluating why you're doing what you're doing, even our last podcast, Tim Corbin made reference to that. You really got to evaluate why you're doing what you're doing. But the best advice to any coach is, when you get around older coaches or any set of coaches, ask questions and keep your mouth closed and keep your ears open. And constantly try to take in information. That was a very valid point. I'm so glad you brought that up. Let's get into the infield play, man, because this is such a great topic to talk about, and we're going to do our best to verbalize it through a podcast. But the infield play, we're going to talk about the six-tool stuff at the end. But talk about your infield philosophy, and then what and who have been your influences on really developing that specific philosophy on how to become a great infielder.
Pretty much what I've just been talking about, all the information we just talked about, that would be the development of of my philosophy as an infield instructor. A lot of times coaches specialize in one area, and that limits them to that area. It's kind of like cross training. You play baseball year round, you don't become very athletic. So if I want to be a great coach, if I understand speed and quickness training, if I understand how the body works, if I understand flexibility and mobility, if I understand the pitching mechanics of a pitcher, if I understand the mechanics of a swing and so forth, if I understand the game from top to bottom and player development, I'm able to cross-train what I know. I spent, 15, 20 years with some of the best pitching guys in the world. And so taking what I've learned from the throwing delivery and the ability to repeat, and how does that apply to the infielder? Mm-hmm. And we can take all of these lessons learned, and we can cross-train them into the field that we are working with. So, for example, speed and quickness training. I've done years and years of speed and quickness training. I've done a lot of mental game training, a lot of pitching training, and so forth. So I take all of that information and I apply it to infield training, because as the infielder, rarely is throwing a priority. It's go play catch, little long toss, little quick catch, and let's go. For our throwing routine, that's 10% of the process. We work on every different throw possible in a daily routine. And not only is it fun, but it's challenging, and it allows the player to get on the field and play unconscious. And when he's unconscious, he'll be at his best. And two, he'll be able to repeat what is necessary for that specific call of duty. If the ball is hit up the middle and he's feeling the ball off balance, how's he going to throw it off balance with repeatability at 150 feet? So it's accurate hitting the first baseman in the chest. It's because he's prepared. It's kind of like Steph Curry. He goes and he does the best pregame routine in the world, arguably, and he's the best player. And he's not the biggest, fastest, or strongest. So part of the belief is that physical tools are overrated. Size, strength, age, all overrated. It's how you prepare. We call that guy the rat. One of the six tools. No one outworks the rat. No one outprepares the rat. And the rat totally committed to 212, meaning 1 degree of separation. Water boils at 212, not 211. Yep. So he's out there just like the coach. He's tuned in to details, but he has to find a way to make it fun and enjoyable, and where it's not too predictable. So every day is the exact same boredom. But now you have to take the creativity of the coach to make it enjoyable and fun for the player. It's not long and boring. It's quick and efficient, covering many different areas and switching it up. So just in our pregame, warm-up, we can get a lot done in a little bit of time, just like Steph Curry, and he's committed to that routine. So when Steph gets in the game, no matter how the ball is delivered to him, he's able to get off a great shot because he's worked on every different angle, every different balance point. And he just does it briefly over time. So we incorporate that, and a lot of that comes from understanding speed, quickness, balance, body work, and then also learning a lot from the pitching side, how balance and repeatability is everything on the mound. Well, how do we create balance and repeatability on the infield? And once again, going back to it, rarely do we have any focused practice time. It's very simple. And you know, some guys do a pretty good job, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of little things you can do in a little bit of time where your players are going to get a lot better.
Sure.
When they get on the field, they're much more prepared just to play, like we said, unconscious. So going into speed, quickness training, reaction training, applying that to drills, I think the biggest problem that we have in infield training and baseball training as a whole is it's predictable. The game is unpredictable and practice is predictable, and that's a problem because when the game is different than practice, the mind doesn't know how to respond because it's at a different speed and different pace, and it's not comfortable and familiar with it. So one of my goals as a coach is to take practice. It's predictable to most, but we're going to make it unpredictable. So, for example, if you're doing drills, the typical infield session would be, you know, maybe you got 15 minutes of drills with your guys and then you jump into some team stuff, or maybe you get 30 minutes, but it's very limited. And a lot of guys just do standard short hops. They know, and when I'm talking about predictability, is the guy knows what the guy's throwing him. Short hop right at him. Now he's going to work 10 backhands and forehand. He's rolling a couple, keep the ball to the left to center. You know, just working on predictable things. He knows what he's working on. Well, I want to take the unpredictable
right
into practice so that the player becomes the master of read, recognizing, and reacting within tenths of seconds. So his feet, hands, everything works within tenths of seconds, and it works on time with the right footwork, glove work, and posture. And that's kind of the philosophy of most of the drills, teaching guys how to read, recognize, and react, just like a hitter would. But the hitters we know have about 3.5 tenths of a second to get it all done, right?
Yep.
Read, recognize, and react. And now you have the infielder. If he's off 1 to 3 tenths of a second, he might make a short hop, an in-between hop, and he'll misplay the ball. But we're competing just like the hitter of being on time, getting to a great launch position, just like the hitter. So when the ball gets the contact zone, I am efficient to take advantage of tenths of seconds. And then once I am on time and present in a great posture and a great launch position, now that I've been drilled and skilled into unpredictable movements, you know, lateral right, left, stop steps back, right, left, angles in, going and getting balls, or just stealing a routine ball. And there's about 9 different plays and angles to go. Well, I want to be within 1/10 of a second, the ability. And we do it a lot with the outfielders. We expect them to be great with drop steps. You know, they have a limited amount of time to take the right drop step and angle. And if they're off anywhere from 1 to 5 tenths of a second, they're not going to make the play on a hard hit ball. Well, I like to translate that into the infield. We need to be masters of tenths of seconds where our feet are responding the right direction, right angle. So trying to incorporate all that in the cross training and the speed training and that, you know, I've been able to incorporate and create drills that are unique and fresh and that are challenging to the players so the game slows down and becomes easier.
That's awesome. And if you could, you know, like get into a little bit of, for instance, like the advanced catch play you were talking about. And I think a lot of coaches, a lot of our listeners may be stuck in the same rut of just the traditional, hey, let's go out and get our arm loose. Like you said, play catch, move it back, long toss, bring it back in, quick hands and roll. What's the difference in the advanced catch play that you guys do with your infielders?
So one of them is we have a video online. It's a throwing drill for catchers and infielders. And over the last probably 10 years of observing major league infielders and the top infielders, at the amateur level, they could be high school guys, they could be college guys, just the top guys, though. When you see the top guys that are consistent, they all throw from the same arm slot. I call it a power V, call it a tight V. And basically, it's a position where when you draw your hand back, like in a slingshot, or you're pulling a lawnmower, and every major leaguer throws from that same slot, everyone. Relays, double plays, slow rollers, routine ground balls. The only time they'll change out of the slot a little bit is they have a lot of time and they might take a little bit longer of an arm stroke, but it's out of still the V. So what we'll see is and I was just at the Erico Games coaching in August, and you know, it's the top infielders in the country, all the future draft picks, all the top guys selected by Major League Baseball. And, you know, I sit back and I watch. We have Gary Patchett, former professional. He's in the dugout with us, and Mike Rouse, former professional. You know, big leaguers, minor leaguers, and you know, we sit and we talk and we break it down, and I'm observing pretty much the whole game, not only the game, but I'm observing the infielders one pitch at a time. I'm watching the way they set up. I'm watching arm stroke. I'm watching posture and flexibility and footwork and positioning. And basically what you see is you see that rarely, you know, the guys that are really good have repeatable slots. And they all get to the V, every single one of them. But there's a large percentage of them that don't repeat, that have longer strokes, that have unrepeatable strokes, and they lack great carry and they lack consistency. Mm-hmm. So we do a drill, a series of drills that work out of the V. So you're mastering a slot. And if you can get to the slot consistently, which it's the strongest position your arm can be in, and also the shortest and the most repeatable, you are in the business of being a really good thrower. And you'll see that in the big leagues. The big leagues play 162 games in 180 days, and they rarely have errors. And they're tired. I mean, could you imagine? I mean, we think a high school season is long, or a college season, they're sore and tired. I mean, these guys are nonstop. Right? And their arms don't break down, and their arms are still consistent, and they're strong from beginning to the end. They're in the World Series, still throwing 90-plus across the infield. And so how do they do it? So learning from watching over and over and over for years, I'm going, you know what, this is what they're all doing, and I've never heard anybody teach it. I never heard anybody teach it ever for 30 years, 25 years of infield coaching and playing. Never heard it. I was like, as a player, I didn't know how to repeat. Like they just said, be short arm hitter. You know, and I was like, what does that mean? So basically we created drills that actually allow the infielder to know exactly what his slot is and how he can repeat it. And he repeats his slot over and over and over. And it becomes repeatable, but it becomes really simple because one, the velocity is there, two, the carry is there, and three, the arm doesn't wear out. So we incorporate that series into, we also incorporate a bunch of different footworks and that are game-like and glove works as well. I kind of have to show it on stage to be specific. But the other thing is challenging players to work faster than game speed and then toning it down for the game. So if I can get comfortable with the uncomfortable, so if I'm doing quick catch, we have some drills that we're not even throwing a ball, but you're moving as fast as you possibly can, trying to maintain balance. So the body gets comfortable with speed. So, like, you know, when you're a kid, if you see 80, it's really fast. But by the time you're in high school, it's slow, right? 90 in high school is fast. But when you're in college, you're just used to it.
Right.
The body gets familiar with what it sees and what it feels and what it practices. So what we do is in some of these throwing exercises, we get the infielders to go totally out of comfort. And then we tone it down. And then the game, when they're working at game speed, it's actually slow because they're used to working faster. And the body finds a way to compensate and get comfortable with it. So, Those are different components of the catch play.
Perfect. I'm so glad you're going into that. And again, we're excited to see you up on stage. And I'm sure that somewhere in this presentation, you're going to talk about your time in the Dominican. And if you haven't been on Nate's website, you need to check it out and look at some of the vignette videos they've done with the players in the Dominican. It's called Dominican Dirt. And they've got some variations of things they're doing with caps, which I'm sure you'll go into. But talk about your time down the DR. And obviously, I know that's had a huge impact on you as a coach, bringing the German team down there. But talk about the Dominican Republic experience for you.
Sure. Been down there for about the last 10 years, doing most of the observing, just watching. And it's not so much that they're being coached. It's really the advantage of not being coached. We coach the athleticism out of our players very often. We also create players that overthink. The Dominicans are undercoached to an advantage. So if you see it, like 2 years ago, I pulled up the hotel, and right behind the hotel, we've been there for so long, we know all the kids because we've seen them grow. You know, if I've been there for 10 years, the kids were 6, 7 when I first got there. Now they're 16, 17. So we got to see them develop and mature. And for example, one boy pulled up to the hotel. He's down in the back wall, and he's throwing the ball off the wall for about an hour. And he's throwing, every time he catches the tennis ball off the wall, he immediately gets rid of it as quick as he can. He's just working, and he's not even really working on anything. He's just having fun.
Right.
What he's working on is his exchange. You wonder why so many Dominicans are playing middle infield in the big leagues. Well, the things that he's working on off that wall, he doesn't even know he's working on, but he's mastering the intricacies of being a great infielder. One, he's working on, and I was actually filming him on my iPhone. I made a really cool little video. He has flip-flops on. He's got a shirt half on. His hat's on crooked. He's about 11 years old. He's got a beat-up glove and an old torn-up tennis ball, and he's throwing at every different arm angle. So he's throwing, we call it 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. So he's throwing at every single arm angle, and he doesn't even know. He's just having fun. So wherever he feels that he's throwing it. So he's working all arm angles. Then he's working throwing off-balance throws. So half the time he'll get it off-balance and just throw it off-balance at a different arm angle. Then he's working thousands and thousands of quick exchange, getting the ball in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And every time they field the ball off the wall, when they throw it quickly, which that's what they do majority of the time, their feet are never stopping. So now they have the best feet because their feet never stop.
Sure.
They have the best exchange because they're always getting rid of the ball in and out, in and out, in and out with their feet moving. Then they're throwing at all different arm slots with all different balance positions, off leg and then regular with a shuffle. And those are five key areas. Well, then let's add hand-eye coordination, which is the most important. And when the hands don't stop, their hands remain loose because when the hands stop, there's tension and stiffness in the hands. But right as they feel that the hands go right to the center of their body and they throw it immediately. So the hands constantly have movement and rhythm, just like their feet. Now their feet and hands have rhythm. So then when you think of those qualities I just named, those are qualities of the best infielders in the world. Now, they do that. That kid will do that for, let's say, anywhere from an hour to 3 hours a day. Then from there, I said hi to him because I know him a little bit. They don't speak English. They recognize me from, you know, years past. And I go in the hotel, check, and I come back out, and then now he's out there playing pickle. So it's in the afternoon. So he's playing pickle for anywhere from an hour to 3 hours. What does pickle teach? Quick exchange, over and over, and accuracy and repeatability with a short arm stroke. Then you're working quickness of the feet, lateral explosive movements. So he has no speed, you know, trainer teaching him how to be fast. He's training fast and becoming fast because he's changing directions over and over with a hard crossover step, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Then he jumps, grabs a glove, and he's working quick hands in exchange over and over for 1 to 3 hours. Then he goes over, and it goes all the way into 10 o'clock at night.
Sure.
And we're wondering why, and he has no coaching and no instruction. But Nikolai Bernstein has a great quote, and I picked it up from Jerry Weinstein. The body will organize itself to accomplish the goal of the activity.
Yep.
The body finds a way. If I got to get rid of the ball quick, I'm going to get to the most efficient arm stroke possible. And I'm going to get to a balance position. My feet are going to move quickly. So everything starts to work when the body has a goal. So when you're playing pickle, there is a goal. I got to get rid of the ball as quick as I can. The runner's goal is not to get out, right? So the body organizes itself to get to balance in strong position. And they do it over and over and over and over and over and over. And, you know, we're over here in the U.S. trying to teach everybody how to do everything versus give them an activity with a goal.
Yep.
And go do it 10,000 times. And in America, we used to do that about 20 years ago. Now with phones and all the information and travel ball and all the pro instructors, it's like we're getting in the way of the development. Mm-hmm. Of the great infielder. When you look in the big leagues, the best infielders are Dominican, Latino, not because they're Latino, because of their process to becoming who they have become. And it continues. And they're going to continue to be the best infielders. So when we do our drills, we try to incorporate the highest number of reps in the least amount of time at game speed, like playing pickle. You played pickle for 20 minutes, you're exhausted. Well, yeah, and that's like a game because you're working at game speed and you are playing a game. So how can we incorporate those concepts into practice? And then thinking about, okay, well, practice, typically you only have a few minutes with your infielders, then you got to go to teamwork and practice is over because they got to go home and do homework. So great infielders are made before and after practice, not after practice. My infielders need to understand that I need to be creative as a coach to figure out ways not just to hit them fungos. Fungos are predictable. Fungos,
sure.
fungos. You have, you know, over 100 feet to read, recognize, and react. I want to challenge them, closer range, putting them in a game-type situation where they're being challenged and moving all nine directions without knowing what's coming. So the Dominican has been awesome because it's really put it in perspective. Because people talk about the Dominican and they act like they know. Yeah, the Dominicans do it this way. Well, no one knows unless you go there. You don't really know. And I've had the opportunity to go there for almost 10 years and observe, and it's been a lot of fun. We're looking to go back this year too, possibly.
That's pretty awesome. That's a neat experience. And again, like you can tell how much that shaped and influenced your coaching and the way that you're viewing things and how you're going about it, which leads us right into this. Let's get into the infield principles that you hold true, that you really believe strongly in and can talk through. Let's get into that and really try to, if I'm an infield coach and I'm listening again, I can challenge what you're giving us against what I'm doing. What are those very important infield principles you believe in?
We're all seeking to have physical results. Ultimately, that's the game. To win the game, you got to get out there and play it. And we spend almost all of our time on the physical side of the game. And so I call it the 95-5 rule. And basically, the game is 95% physical and 5% mental. But the 5% mental controls the physicals. So constantly remind our guys, get your mind right. Get your mind right. Get your mind right. We call it G-Y-M-R, G-Y-M-R. When we send texts, when I text all my infield guys constantly at the bottom, I just put G-Y-M-R at the bottom. We always finish with G-Y-M-R. And that's reminding our guys to always get your mind right, get your mind right, get your mind right. Because if your mind is right, the body will follow. And the results will take care of themselves if you put the work in and practice. We're looking for those results in the game, so let's get our minds right. So what does it mean to get your mind right? What does it mean to have that 5% totally handled and taken care of? And we have four simple mental approach principles. And starts off with, basically, we call it the goal. The goal is to not take pitches off. And the infielder would say, I don't take pitches off. Part of our motivation there is to get them to know why, what's the value in what we're asking of them. So we're asking of them, don't take pitches off. We want them to own that. Every time they say, I don't take pitches off, coach, I'm a grinder. We call that guy the grinder. I don't take pitches off. Well, that's principle number one. And in the concept of taking pitches off, the ball is going to travel when squared up about 100 feet in half a second. And the average base runner is going to travel about 10 feet in half a second. If I'm a half a second late, I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to get these guys to fight for tenths of seconds, not taking pitches off. They're present, they're focused, they're on time, one pitch at a time for over 100 plus pitches a game. So if there's 100 plus pitches in a game, my job, my goal is not to take one of those pitches off. I'm present. I'm on time. I'm focused one pitch at a time. Understanding that tenths of seconds matter. One, from the aspect of the base runner, two, from the aspect of having range. You think about that. The ball is going to travel 100 feet in half a second when squared up. And,
right.
And typically in the infield, you don't even have to travel 15 feet. So if you're 2/10 of a second late, you don't have a chance on a ball that's squared up. Also picking hops. You got to pick hops. That in-between hop's the killer hop. So if I'm a 1/10 to 2/10 of a second late on my read, I'm probably going to miss my read. It's all about my read. So I have to fight to be on time. And with the goal throughout the entire game is I don't take pitches off. That's my goal. And we have our players at the end of the game actually grade themselves. How many pitches did you take off today? And we want them to be conscious of that goal and also evaluating themselves. So being on time, being present, we call that guy the grinder. That's the goal. The goal is not to take pitches off. The second is the approach. And the approach is the situation dictates. The situation is changing pitch to pitch, count to count. And our infielders, I don't think, typically are really, really tuned in every pitch, every count. I think they get lost. And when we think of the situations that govern the game, we say BSHSA, bunt, steal, hit and run, swing away. So those are the four situations that govern the entire game. So when I'm on defense, according to the outs, the count, the inning, where we're batting in the batting order, who's batting, the score, all that determines that the count changes from 0-0 to 0-1 or 0-0 to 1-0. We have to know how the situation is dictated according to count. We have to be tuned in every count. So every count is going to determine with the score, innings, outs, the batter, you know, is it a bunt situation, steal situation, hit and run situation, or is it a swing away situation? So we want our players tuned in, understanding that the situation dictates everything and the situation changes count to count. Teaching our guys about the BSHSA so they understand the different times when teams have tendencies to do specific situational baseball, but teaching them to have that high instincts and high IQ so that they really get the game so we can sit back. And the great John Wooden said, my players are so prepared when the game starts, I could just take a nap.
Right.
Well, can we prepare our players in practice? Because typically practice is very unsituational. You might do situations for a little bit, but fungos are fungos. We need to create situations in almost everything we do so the player is situationally minded. Stop and count, out, score, innings, batters. You know, what are situations right now in drills that we're doing so that we're training their minds to be situationally aware? Really, you know, the approach, situation dictates. So it starts out with my goal. I don't take pitches off. Second, my approach is the situation dictates. Third would be the mindset. The mindset is challenged on every pitch, challenging every pitch. We want the player every pitch thinking in, back, lateral, or bullet. In, back, lateral, bullet. That's kind of his mindset. He's going to be challenged. And when we're thinking challenged, not just the ball is going to be hit to me, but challenged, challenged on every pitch, it's going to heighten our focus, our anticipation, and our intensity. When that happens, the average becomes great, and the great becomes the best because they are at a whole other level of play. Very often, as an infielder, we get comfortable. We're just expecting the ball. I want my guys to expect to be challenged in back, lateral, bullet. And the ultimate goal really is to take the average player and make them great and make the great player the best. So if we can get our minds to be right, not taking pitches off, being situationally aware because the situation dictates, getting my mindset right, I'm challenging every pitch. And the last one is number four is making plays. And that's my attitude. My attitude is dominated with what we call as the do. The do. The do is present. The do is what you're going to do on that pitch. And the mind wanders. It's very vast. It's about, let's say, 40 visual images or thoughts per second the mind's capable of. That's over 250,000. In a two-hour game, the mind is capable to move, and it moves. It's very difficult to keep the mind focused and present. And the time zone that success takes place is only in the present. And the infielder's mind typically goes to the past, call it the did, or the future to the don't. The don't is what I hope I don't do. I hope I don't make an error. Hope I don't make a mistake. And the past is frustration. Why did I do that? Why did I strike out? Why did I miss that last ball? So when the player's caught in between, and he's not locked in on the do, I'm making plays. His mind wanders. We call it being caught in between. He's in a struggle. And the voice of doubt is real to every single human being, and the voice of frustration is real. It goes in the mind of every single human. So our goal is to get them to master like a broken record. When they're setting in, the ball's, you know, being delivered from the pitcher, their attitude is, I'm making plays. That's all I'm doing. I just make plays. It's all confidence. And we call it the law of attraction. The body tries to accomplish what the mind thinks. Whatever my mind's thinking, my body's going to try to accomplish that. That's just the way it works, the law of attraction. So if I'm thinking to do, I'm making plays, well, I got a great chance to make plays. The big four, real simple, starts off with the goal. And the goal is not to take pitches off the grinder. Present, on time, focused, one pitch at a time. The approach, situation dictates. Situation change, pitch to pitch, count to count. We have to be tuned in. The mindset is challenged on every pitch, thinking in, back, lateral, and bullet. And the final is the attitude. And the attitude is making plays. So throughout practice, we're constantly trying to drill those concepts into the subconscious mind of the player so that he, just like he knows his phone number, he doesn't have to think about his phone number. It's unconscious. When you ask him, it just comes out. We want our players to be unconscious when they're able to play the game, but they're playing it with those four intentions.
I love it. And I think when you get into get your mind right, let's just talk about mental game for a second. What else are you doing that, and kind of go into that practice, those coaching cues, the language that you're using to really, because how important the mental game is for infielders, as you just alluded to, it's enormous. And getting the right attitude, the right mindset, the preparation, all those things go into it. But talk about mental game and what specifically you do throughout a practice or throughout a season to obviously get those players where they need to be mentally.
I think that first they have to understand the mental game, because if they don't understand how the mind works, they don't know how to work within their mind. And Hank Aaron was the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest player of all time. He's a five-tool player, and hitting dominates the game, and he's the greatest hitter ever with the most RBIs. So when I think of great players, I think of Hank Aaron, and Hank Aaron was the master of simplicity, the master. And to be great at something, we have to take the complex, make it simple. So how can we simplify the mental game so that it's actually understood and owned by the player? And as a coach, it doesn't matter if it makes sense to us. It means nothing. Because if it doesn't resonate with the player, and if it doesn't become real, it has no value.
Right.
So typically as coaches, we like to hear ourselves speak, and we like to try to impress with our big words and our knowledge. And it's taken us anywhere from 15 to 40 years to figure out what we know now.
Right.
So we're trying to get an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old or a 15-year-old to understand what we understand. It's not even possible.
Yeah.
So the art of the coach is, how can I make this simple, the complex? And as we see in the big leagues, the best players in the world take the complex and make it simple. So how can I simplify it? So what we do is we have an infielder's card, and I'm going to make them available at the convention for everybody with the big four mental approach we just went through along with other mental concepts on the card. It's just a small postcard, 5x7, and it's basically something that we want them to own, to memorize. So it becomes a part of who they are. Unless something is studied regularly and if it's not heard on an ongoing basis, it doesn't become a part of that person. And when they're done playing, they're like, yeah, now I kind of figured it out. Coach, what he was teaching me kind of makes sense now. Well, we want it to make sense right now. We want them to be able to apply it because that's when it's going to make a difference. So the card is a simple way to reiterate and study what's important and what our mental goals are. And then what we do is in drills, so we'll do drills that actually teach the different components of the mental game. So making decisions. The decision is I'm making plays. Anytime you're in doubt, you're not going to make plays because the mind is unsure. When the mind's unsure, the body's unsure. So we're in trouble when we're caught in between. So doubt, uncertainty, wonder, fear, it's all crippling. And that player's caught in between. And every infielder, no matter who they are, Hall of Famer or Little Leaguer, they've all been to the place where they're doubting and they don't want the ball. And basically, they're in the future. They don't focus. They're focusing on what they don't want to do. I don't want to make an error. And what we have to do is train our mind because we can block out the negative thoughts. So basically, we're trying to teach our players to be dominated, dominate their mind with the do, the do, the do, the do. I'm making plays. I'm making plays. I'm making plays. And they just repeat it over and over. And the best infielders, a lot of them are self-talkers. They're positive self-talkers. They're right. Constantly talking to themselves. The best pitchers, the best boxers. Ali was, you know, arguably the most confident athlete in the history of sport. And he, when you dig down deep into his writings, he was the most fearful of them all. And he constantly would talk himself up because he was afraid. And it goes back to the voice of doubt. And his infielders were sitting there. We're not hitting well about 70% of the time. And then the innings are slow and long. So the mind starts to go to the past, starts to go to the future. So our ability to control our focus and be present one pitch at a time, on time, one pitch at a time. With the mindset, we call it attack. That's I'm making plays. My light is green. My throttle's on. Octane is high. I'm making plays. My brake is not on. The light is not yellow. I'm locked in. I'm making plays. So it's training their minds. We constantly talk about it. And then when they take ground balls, too, as they step up, I have guys, you know, say, making plays. They're reiterating it over and over and over and over. We break up a lot of times when we're done picking up balls. They knuckle up guys and say, hey, making plays. So it's just a reiteration over and over and over of the broken record of what has value. That's the decision. So we're teaching them the value of making a decision, committing to that decision. Mm-hmm. In the infield, typically we don't teach the mental game. Typically, we might say something to someone who's struggling. But let's teach the mental game, the mental approach on defense. Clearing the mind is essential and not thinking about mechanics. So often, too, guys are trying to do things right, because coaches tell me I got to go left to center and I got to feel with my glove at this angle. Well, I'm in big trouble because I'm losing my athleticism when I'm incorporating my mind. So we're trying to get these guys to incorporate, kind of like Bruce Lee. He talked about being like water, no color, no flavor, no taste, no shape, water. Be like water, clear your mind, be like water. Well, water is nothing. It's the most powerful and the most, it's the best source of, it's the source of life. It's like, but it's nothing. It's amazing. And you want to be great on the field, you have to be simple. You got to be like water. So clearing your mind, being an athlete, being unconscious, and just playing the game, extremely important. So those are some things we'll talk about. But once again, getting them to understand it, and we put it into DCBA, Decide, Clear, Breathe, Attack, thanks to the good friend Greg Moore. We've done a lot of mental camps together. That was Greg's acronym, and I've been able to advance it and utilize it in the infield side. Make a decision, clear your mind. The decisions I'm making plays, I clear my mind, I breathe, which is I'm relaxed, I'm loose, I'm light and loose, and I attack, the A's attack. So we go through DCBA a lot. We go through the big four, and then we try to reiterate over and over. Breathing's important, too, so we spend time breathing, too, and slowing the game down.
Well, we got Greg coming on the podcast here in a few weeks, so we're excited to kind of let him dive into that. And while you're going through all this, Nate, it is, again, it's one of those situations we talked about earlier, constantly challenging what you know. And I'm thinking back to when I coached and going off with the things that you're teaching, I know I'm with probably the silent majority of our listeners going, man, I didn't maximize our infielders. I know I didn't get the most out of them. And I think, tell me, do you think that's the majority of coaches? They just don't get the most out of their infielders? They don't just really dial it up to the degree that they need to?
I think that it's a lot like hitting. Typically, hitters, we try to develop hitters with soft off tee work and BP, and that doesn't develop a hitter. The hit tool is hard to find. It's hard to find a hitter. It's not hard to find a guy that can hit BP. It's not hard to find a guy that can hit good soft offs. It's hard to find a guy that can hit in the game. Mm-hmm. Very difficult. Very difficult to find a guy that can hit a good pitcher and make cause havoc to the pitcher because he's a great hitter. And we take the same approach because hitting is about timing, pitch recognition, and game plan. But how often do we practice those three components? Rarely do we.
Right.
And the best coaches do. But rarely. It's very monotonous. Soft toss, tee work, BP, you get three rounds of five, you're done. Three rounds of five is not even getting me warmed up. Come on, coach, let's go. So it's like, how do we be creative to maximize reps? And that's the job of the coach. How can we be creative? Because the highest number of game speed, game challenge, game focused reps is going to make the best player. Not three rounds of five BP. It's not going to even come close to doing it unless you just have a great hitter and he's just natural. So you give him that and he's going to be fine, but everybody else is going to about 190 to 280. Mm-hmm. And so we take that same approach for infielders. They go over and they do some short hops, a little bit of glove work, play some easy catch, not at game speed, not with game focus, not throwing the ball at game speed, not moving at game speed. So once you're loose, we try to incorporate all the game principles on the catch play side of it. But we need to do that as we do our drills and our work. So now the typical coach goes, hey, go do your drills, a little bit of glove work, hit some fungos, and then they're done. That didn't even begin to challenge me. Completely predictable, no challenge. So we have to change our approach and also realize that there's only so much time and only so much we can do. So great infielders are made before and after practice. So if you want to be great coaches, you want your players to be great, you have to, one, be more creative in your idea of what we're going to do at practice, but two, what are we going to do before and after practice? And it's not so much the coach being there. It's giving these guys a routine, a process, saying, these are seven drills that are going to challenge you to read, recognize, and react within 2 to 4 tenths of a second. Challenge to have the right first step going on one of the nine different angles. Challenge. Can you do that before practice? It's kind of like we have the guy who runs a little. We say, get to practice early and work on your short game. I want to see you work on drag bunting Tuesdays and Thursdays, half hour before practice. Well, we need our infielders to all be there a half hour early. We're sticking around 45 minutes late, getting the extra work in. And what we're going to see is we're going to see a good infielder become great. And we're going to see a great infielder become the best. And I've seen it over the last 15 years. I have two nephews, one's in eighth grade and one's in ninth grade. And I work with them a couple days a week. We've been working for several years now. And their footwork and glove work is as good as most guys in single A right now. Now, they don't have the size and strength. But when the size and strength comes, they're going to be hard to keep up with those guys because they we train at a whole nother speed, a whole nother level, a whole nother challenge, and they love it. One, it's challenging, it's just not monotonous. How many ground balls did I get? But it's you know, high movement, high challenge, and a lot of fun. So I'm gonna, you know, at the convention there's only so much time. I'm gonna give my best to share some of the stuff that we're doing, but there's only so much time. And once we start talking, it's almost like you're out of time.
Right.
So I'll do my best to be as proficient as I can. And, you know, at the Aereco games, I got to see a lot of, once again, talking about, you know, I get to see the best infielders. I have a chance to work with them, and I have a chance just to observe. And some of the observations that I made this year, I took some notes. I like to just run through those because these guys are the top guys in the country, and I think that this is kind of a pretty standard for most guys. The guys in the area codes typically are, you know, more athletic, more tooled, but they're not necessarily, you know, fundamentally better. And I think there's a common theme. You know, some are fundamentally better, but not necessarily. A lot of times we pick guys because of their plus tooled. Mm-hmm. And so basically noticing the first thing is pre-pitch movement. I watched, we played five games. I watched every infielder. Then we played the underclass games. I watched another three or four games. That's almost 10 games. I would say 10% of the infielders had good free pitch, getting to a good launch position, just like a hitter gets to a good launch position to be explosive, just like the infielder. Once he lands on his feet, what kind of launch position is he in? And 90% are in postures that are not efficient in maximizing their athleticism. Big need there, work on it. And we have some great drills for that too, that are simple and easy. Lack of communication. I don't know if I heard anybody talking outs or speeds of runners or where we're going on hits. Super minimal on communication. Arm slots. Some guys with real repeatable arm slots. Some guys with very unrepeatable. So kind of a lack of getting to that V. Flexibility issues. You know, some guys are super loose. And there's plenty of guys. You see it quite a bit with the third and first basemen. But, you know, working on our flexibility routine. I think that's lacking, you know, across the board, making it a high priority so that our players are loose, free and easy, low to the ground. Most infielders playing a little high, like to get them playing a little bit lower to the ground and so forth. Just typical things you see across the board, high school, college, professional. Most players don't have a great plan. Even watching most players play catch, it's pretty typical, like we said. Get a little long toss, play a little quick catch, and then we're ready to go. And for some, I might be a little too detailed. And for some, I think guys can take, you know, even if I have, you know, if I'm too detail-oriented, because some guys are less detail-oriented. But if other guys are not quite as detail-oriented, they could take some of the stuff and still utilize some of it. Maybe not to the extreme that I like to go.
Stay on that a little bit. Talk about some of those favorite drills that you love to work with your infielders with that are tried and true and can give. Again, if you may not be able to talk about them in more in depth on stage, but they can listen to the podcast and still get something out of it. So talk about some of those favorite drills you really like to use with those guys.
From our different reads, I say there's nine different footworks and angles to go as an infielder. And so what I like to do is break them down into series. So if it's a ball to my right, I think it's important to work with predictability on the different variations. So, for example, I'm going to do a drop step backhand where I'm going back on a ball. Then if I'm just going to do lateral backhand. Then if I'm going to do a backhand where I come and get it. So basically, there's three different plays. So on those three different plays, I start with number one, I'll go drop step. Then I'll do lateral backhand. Then I'll do come and get it backhand. So I do maybe, let's just say, 10 reps of each. The player is working, knowing it's predictable, so he's working on mastering the footwork and the glove work of that specific play. And then he sets up, and when he sets up, he doesn't know which one of the three plays I'm going to give him. And now he has to read, recognize, and react within a tenth of a second. I'm not back at home plate. I'm probably anywhere from 10 to 15 feet in front of him. And there, once he does his pre-pitch and he lands, I'm going to roll the ball either hard for a deep drop step, not quite as hard, but more lateral movements. So he's going to have to do a straight crossover, or I'm going to do it in where he's got to come and get it with the sweeping backhand. So now he has to read, recognize, and react on three plays versus just knowing what's coming. And we incorporate that into then we'll go to glove side, and we'll do the same thing on that side. Then we'll do balls at you. Some balls you back up on. Some balls you feel right where you're at. Some balls you take one step in. Some balls you have to take three steps in. Some balls you have to run and get. So now you have series of plays. You work on each one, and then you mix them up. And then at the end, you go, okay, now I'm going to mix up all nine plays. You don't know what's coming. And they only have about 1 to 2 tenths of a second because you're rolling the ball firm from a close distance. So they learn to move efficiently and effectively with the right footwork and glove work, reacting within a tenth of a second. So it's working at game speed and game challenge. And I truly believe that the highest number of reps at game speed, game challenge, game focus creates the best infielder, because he just played the game. And the problem with the game is only played a couple of days a week. And you have to wait. And then you get in the game and you have to wait for the ball. You don't know when the ball's coming. So when the game's over, I got three games in this week. I only got four plays, two easy backhands, one slow roll and one right at me. Like you can't get better with four reps.
Right.
For me to be the master of those four reps, I need to do, you know, at 10,000 of them, many as I can do it while being challenged at that game speed, game focus. Then when I get in the game, my mind is right. I don't take pitches off, so I'm present on time and focused. So when I land, the ball crosses the contact zone every time. I'm in a great launch position. So pitch number 52, when I haven't got a ball all games, I'll rock it in a six hole and I have a perfect deep drop step. I go back, my hands work, it's effortless, nice throw to first base. And now I'm like, wow, that guy's the best I've ever seen. Well, yeah, he's pretty good. It's just because he trains right. Mm-hmm. He's a good player, but he became great. And the good player, if we don't have him train great, will only be good. So we want to train great. Getting them to be challenged, game speed, game focus, is going to be, you know, one of the great separators. So how do we be creative to do that? And all the stuff that pretty much I do is I either make it up or I'll see a drill and I'll add to it and be more creative and try to make it better, where it's more efficient. Versus it's predictable. I want the drills to be unpredictable, and I want them to be kind of ballistic, where they're moving fast, and they don't stand in line. So if they're standing in line, let's say, because I'll do ballistic drills where you got to come to a sweeping backhand, and we'll do four in a row, and I'll roll it to their right, kind of slow. They come through it, they feel it, they get it back to me, they backpedal as fast as they can. They'll do five reps within like 20 seconds. And so they're learning how to move at a pace that's uncomfortable and fast. So then when I hit them ground balls, they're like, are you kidding? This is way too easy.
Right.
It's kind of a concept I got from surfing. When I surf, I heard this from a pro. He was saying, surf the most unpredictable, challenging waves you can possibly surf. And when you can master those, when you surf good waves, it's a joke. So most guys only want to surf good waves. Oh, that's not good enough. Bumpy, it's messy, it's windy, it's kind of unpredictable. I'm going to just sit in my car and hang out, or I'm going to go, you know, back home. Well, the guy who paddles out into the mess becomes the best because he's challenged at a whole nother level. And so we're trying to challenge our infielders at a whole nother level. So when the game begins, see, the problem typically is the game is hard. The game is challenging. I want the game to be easy. So we're challenging at a different pace like the surfer. And I do surf, so I know exactly what the concept. When I started to challenge myself in that way, in the surfing side, it took my surfing to a whole other level. It's like understanding that, wow, you know, because everybody wants to surf when you look at a magazine, you go, whoa, look at the cover. That looks fun, right? Whoa, that looks nice. Well,
right.
Dude, if you wait for that day happens once a year, you know?
Yep.
It's like,
yep.
The infielder's like, Dad, hit me better ground balls that have better bounces, right? It's like, give me the good hops. Let's drag the field, right? The Dominican's like, he's got his buddy out there. He's 12. He's swinging his brother who's in double A. He's 34-inch bat. He can hardly even swing it. He's hitting choppers and top spins, and the infield's an absolute disaster. And the kid's just mastering hands and hand-eye coordination and moving his feet and reacting. You know, and he gets to the good field, and he's like, come on. Are you kidding right now?
Yep.
And our Americans are so spoiled. I mean, we got all turf fields. These kids that are 12, they don't even know how to read a hop. You know, it's like, yeah. They don't even know how to move their feet. It's actually going to be part of the demise of the American infielder, the turf infield, because it's extremely predictable. And you become great by practicing the unpredictable. We've been talking about the whole time. That's what the great surfer does. That's what the great Dominican infielder does. It's always unpredictable. Well, our American infielders are all practicing predictability. We're going to have a really hard time keeping up. We already are having a hard time keeping up with the middle infielders across the world, and it's going to get even worse because all of our Little League parks now are becoming turf, which is very interesting.
Solid point to consider. I think the last thing I want to get to before we let you go, we obviously truly appreciate your time. If we could fast forward to January, we'd love to see what this presentation is going to look like. And I hope that you have enough time to talk about the sixth tool, which if anybody's heard Nate give this talk, it's just a really inspiring speech, but it really breaks things down very simply. And you've referenced a lot of that throughout this whole talk, but just get into a reference point of the sixth tool for our listeners.
Thanks, Chief. Sixth tool basically came about just from the years of being around. We talked about in the beginning about influences or just all the many different great baseball people I've had the opportunity to be around. So observing, listening, and really seeing what are the habits the ways that successful people go about their business. Stephen Covey talked about for the first 150 years of our country, success literature was based on character, was based on makeup. That's the internal. And in the last so many years, it's become the external. It's it's quick fix ideas and technologies and philosophies that I can get real quick to get a quick solution. I can get a quick result. And the six tools, the opposite of that. It's about the internal, not the external. It's not being so consumed with skill development and the physical development, but it's the development of the insights, it's the 5% that we're talking about. When you think of an iceberg, you can see the tip. That's the skills. That's the physical development. You can see them. You can see the skills of the athlete. You can see his physicality and his athleticism. That's the tip. The strength of the iceberg is below the surface, and that's the character and the makeup. That's the sixth tool. That's the 5%. So we can measure the five tools very easily, the run tool, the throw tool, the field tool, the two hit tools. We can measure those. Radar gun, stopwatches, statistics, tape measure. We can measure those, but to measure the six tools is very difficult. We have a five-tool chart that we give to our players. It teaches them how to evaluate and measure their five physical tools and how to get them better. We also have a six-tool player card, and I'll have those at the convention, too, to give out in our booth to anybody that like one. And basically what it is, it's teaching players how to measure the six tool, the character or makeup tool. That's the 5% that determines the 95. And on there, it goes into what is a six-tool player and how do you measure and grade your six-tool. And I'll give you a simple example. If you've ever heard me give a six-tool talk, it's only a small percentage. It changes regularly because a six-tool talk is about a five-hour talk. I just have a whatever. It's whatever I'm talking about that day, what I feel like discussing from the card. Like right now, talking about a six-tool, like I said, it's about a five-hour talk, but I'm just going to pick one of the components to the six tool. And this came basically from being a scout, being a college recruiter and working with scouts and college recruiters and seeing what's important. And basically what I did was I took what I heard from all these guys over the years and I heard this is important. They all keep saying that these things are important, but the players don't really know because they know how to quantify a 60. They say, if I'm a 6'8", 60, I'm a good runner. If I'm a 7'2", I'm just below average. So they know and they go, I got to get to a 7 or I got to get to a 6'8" if I'm a shortstopper, you know, whatever they're thinking, whatever the message they're being taught, but they know how to quantify it. Well, to measure your mental makeup, which is the 5%, which is more important than any of the run tool, throw tool, field tool. How do we do that? So I call it the five mental makeup tools of the six tool. It's very simple. The first one, the first component is the grinder. And this is how we actually grade players, scouts, and coaches. But I quantified it into a system and put it on this card so that we can use it to be a teaching tool and an evaluating tool. So, for example, I was in Arizona, and we had one of our players who was drafted this year, and he's got a very comfortable scholarship to a Pac-12. He's a freshman this year. He was being evaluated by multiple Major League scouts at this event we had. That we were the Arizona Senior Fall Classic. And in these five areas, when he was younger, he graded extremely high. When he got older, he started to grade lower in these areas from our observation. I'll give you number one, grinder. The grinders are present, they're focused, they're on time, they don't take pitches off. 100 plus pitches a game, they are present and on time. The grinder, he doesn't take pitches off. That's mental makeup tool number one. So when we're evaluating a player, their mental makeup, we're actually evaluating, do they take pitches off? So what we do is we sit there and watch them. We watch him. If I like a guy and I'm wondering, will he fit in the draft? And do I want to give him a scholarship? I will sit there and watch him on pitch number one, pitch number 50, pitch number 68, pitch number 92, pitch number 115. I'm watching about the whole game. Does he repeat? Is he consistent? Is he on time? Is he expecting to be challenged in every pitch? And most guys grade low in that department. Start getting tired. They're not hitting well. It's fourth game of the series. You take pitches off. So we want to teach them what's important and also how they're being evaluated. The grinder. The second one, we call him the dirtbag. He's high energy, high intensity, say he brings the juice. Throttles on, his octane's high, his light is green. We say when the game is over, he feels like he just got done wrestling a bear. That guy gets after it. He brings the juice. So now we sit back and I'm going to grade. Not only is this guy, is he a grinder? Now I'm wondering, is this guy a dirtbag? I watch the way he goes about his business. First guy at his position, first guy in the dugout, first guy picking guys up. Is he high five? Is he bringing the energy? So, okay, I grade him there. And the grading system's a 20-80 scale, so I'm grading him on a 20-80 major league scale. 80 being the highest, 50 being average, 20 being the lowest. So right now when I grade this player out, I'm going dirtbag department. Okay, does he take pitches off? Yeah, I saw him take about 15 pitches off in the entire game. So I'm going to give him a 30. So now I'm going through my list. Grinder, Dirtbag, and then I'm going to the Bulldog. The Bulldog, how big does this guy play regardless of how tall he is, how old he is, how big he is? I don't care about any of that. I'm looking about how big this guy plays. How big does he play? So I watch him. When we say the Bulldog, we can feel him. We can feel how big he is because he's confident. He's believing what he's doing. He's a fearless competitor. So we're watching them, and we're grading him out on the Bulldog department. How big does this guy play regardless of how big he is? Number four, we're going to the Rock. The Rock is headstrong, heart strong, strong from the inside out. How does he respond to adversity? His composure is even, his posture is big, his memory is short, his bounce back is quick. So what we're doing is we're evaluating immediately when something goes wrong or he doesn't get what he wants, we evaluate immediately. Composure, posture, memory short, bounce back immediately. What is he doing on the next pitch? We're grading him out in the Rock department. The last one's the Rat department. No one outworks the Rat, no one out prepares the Rat. The Rat's motto is better every day. So we watch the way he prepares before the game. We watch the way he prepares before each at bat. He's a pitcher. We watch the way how he goes about his business in the bullpen. We watch what he does after the game. We're watching how he prepares. Is he the Rat? So we grade him in the Grinder, Dirtbag, Bulldog, Rock, Rat. These are the five mental makeup departments that pretty much cover almost every area of what really matters on the mental makeup of a player. Now I can quantify and say, okay, you know what he grades? He's a 40 on the Dirtbag department. He's a 80 in the Rat department. So now I can grade him out just like I would grade out his physical tools.
Right.
And then I can teach him. I can say, let's talk for a minute. You're grading low on the Dirtbag. You're low in the Rat department. And you want to be a starter? Or you want to be a big leaguer? Or you want to be an All-American? Let's get real here. I don't care if you have a plus arm. I don't care if you're a plus runner. That's all overrated. We got to get your minds right. We got to develop that sixth tool, and it's going to carry into the five physical tools. So that's one component. There's many different components on the card, but it's a way to teach and measure the sixth tool, which is the mental character makeup tool, which is, you know, so important.
Nate, we cannot thank you enough here at ABCA, and obviously personally thank you for being on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. This is going to be a very well-received episode because it's packed full of so much information, and you're definitely a guy, as we move out west, that we had to get up on the main stage, and we're excited about you getting in front of our coaches and getting this information to them on stage in Anaheim. We hope so many of our listeners come out to see you. Nate, thanks for your time, and again, we wish you all the best. We look forward to seeing you in a couple months.
I'm excited, and I really appreciate you, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be a part of the ABCA. Thank you so much.
Boom. There it is, coaches. Nate Trosky giving you guys some serious details about infield play, helping take your players to brand new levels mentally and physically on the infield. Such big thanks to Nate for carving out some time for us sitting down on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. He definitely delivered on certified audio gold for all our loyal coaches and listeners out there. Thank you, Nate, for doing that for us. If you enjoyed this episode and you're interested in our previous Calls from the Clubhouse shows, there's a complete listing on our website, abca.org. You click on the resources tab at the top. Our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast link will be right there waiting for you. Click on it and check out all the great guests we've had on our shows up to date. You can also head over to iTunes. You can subscribe to our show, and each time a brand new episode is published, it'll show up on your phone or your computer. You'll be ready to listen, learn, and grow, and you will not want to miss out on the great guest that we've got planned for the rest of this fall. If you're on social media, we are too. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We're at ABCA1945. We love hearing from our coaches. Please feel free to send us a message, tweet at us, engage with us. We love catching up. We love hearing your comments. So please feel free to reach out to us anytime. Also, if you're a coach that's craving more baseball knowledge, you have to know about our live Twitter chats called #ABCAChat. They will always be on the Tuesdays after the release of our podcast, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a tremendous opportunity to connect with coaches from all over the world, share coaching information, network with one another. These have been such a huge hit. We're excited, fired up about where they're going moving forward, and we hope you'll be checking in on our next #ABCAChat. Again, my name is Jeremy Schiedinger from the ABCA. You can find me on Twitter @CoachSheets3, or you can shoot me an email at Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, tsts@abca.org. It's always great to hear from you guys. Twitter messages, emails, phone calls, your feedback is always appreciated, so please feel free to reach out to us as well. Again, we turned over a brand new membership year this year. 2016-17 membership has been open since September 1st, and we have just set a brand new ABCA record in our first month with over 2,400 member coaches signing up. Coaches, you have to take advantage of our extensive membership benefits. We got personal liability insurance, clinic videos, Inside Pitch magazine, discounts on championship rings through Terry Berry, hotel rental car discounts, all for $45. It will most certainly prove to be the best investment you've made in your development as a coach, and we hope that you join the largest fraternity of baseball coaches in the world. Head over to abca.org if you're looking for more information. Also, our annual convention's coming up January 5th through the 8th. We're heading out to the Anaheim Convention Center all the way out in Anaheim, California. You could join over 5,000 baseball coaches from all over the world with 4 days, 25 coaching clinics, 300-plus exhibitors in the world's largest baseball trade show, hot stove discussions, business meetings, opportunities to connect and network. It's a tremendous opportunity to make new friends, connect with old friends. Guys, it's an experience that you cannot miss out on. We hope each of you are making plans to join us out in California this January. We also have a couple of awards given away by our proud ABCA partners. Turfus are giving away field maintenance scholarships. I know all of you with fields, you could use some more Turfus product. And again, apply for this scholarship where Turfus can come in and help make your field or be recognized for great work you've already done at your field. We also have Diamond Kinetics. They're looking for any program that's doing great things with technology or a program that's interested in doing great things with technology. And again, those deadlines are October 1st. Guys, it is a great opportunity to get free products into your program. We hope that you take full advantage of that through Turfus, through Diamond Kinetics. More information on that is on our website, abca.org. And you'll be recognized, all winners recognized, at our honors luncheon at our convention. Coaches, again, we sincerely thank each and every one of you guys for listening in. We're so thankful for your loyalty to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. We hope to hear from each of you guys real soon. And again, thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.